Today, as we've all figured out, and I had said already, is the first Sunday in Advent. And as I mentioned last week, it is the first day of the new year. At least as far as our calendar is concerned. And what do you do on the first day of the new year? You make New Year's resolutions. Ever done that? Made a New Year's resolution? Have you ever kept it? For very long, anyway? I resolved to lose 15 pounds. You gained 25 by the end of the year, you know. But have you ever made a New Year's resolution on the first Sunday in Advent? The first day of our New Year? Well, maybe you should try it. I know I should, and maybe I will. I probably will make a couple of resolutions today. Maybe just something to do through Advent and Epiphany, I don't know, but something to think about anyway. But whatever resolutions you do make, keep them. And don't make an Advent resolution like I'm going to lose 15 pounds by the end of the year. Make them about your faith, about God's kingdom and your place in it, our place. Your place as individuals and our place as a family, our place in God's kingdom. Try it. I dare you. I double dog dare you. Try it. Now, another attack. Scripture. Our two main passages today, one from Isaiah, one from Matthew, they're like bookends of the story of the Bible. I know you want to say that Isaiah is in the middle of the Old Testament and the Gospels are kind of the middle of the whole book, but it bookends on the Bible story of hope. Isaiah is a beginning or an end. Matthew is an end or a beginning. Isaiah gives us a vision of the nations streaming forward towards Jerusalem, their swords being hammered into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. You know what a plowshare is, right? Just a blade for a plow. And he says, never will it happen again. Nation shall not lift sword against nation, nor will they ever study war ever again. Ain't going to study war no more. Never again will they have war, so you know what we're going to have? We're going to have peace. All in capitals, exclamation points, bolded out, italics. Peace is what Isaiah is calling for. Unfortunately, for both the Jews of Isaiah's day, all the way through today, and not just the Jews anymore, but all of God's people, such as we Christians who have grafted in as God's people, Isaiah's prophecy has not come to pass. You don't see many people taking an M16 or AK-47 and turning it into a plow. Or a bayonet into cutting down fruit. Prophecy Isaiah made in the 8th century BC thereabouts has not yet come to pass. I got curious about something, so I looked it up. In the past approximately 2,900 years from when this prophecy was made until today, actually 2 years ago was the number I had. I asked Google, Pat knows I love asking Google. I asked Google how many years the world has been at peace since Isaiah made his prophecy. Guess, how many years have we had peace in the world?
None.
Well, Google says 300.
Oh, bless.
Oh, yeah.
300 years of what is this, apparent peace, approximate peace, something like that anyway. Where there wasn't a major conflict. I don't think there's ever been a time in the world when, who knows, maybe in that 300 years, the Sioux were attacking the Apache. That's war, but I don't think that counted in what Google told me. This is a major kind of conflict. 300 years. That's about 10% of the time from when Isaiah made the prophecy to now. So enmity, hate, conflict, and warfare seems to be humanity's normal. It's like people think back to the 50s in church. You build it and they will come. People think that was normal. That's not normal. This is normal today. Living in persecution, living with disinterested people, living with people who are unaware War seems to be humanity's normal, which means that the peace that Isaiah is predicting and saying will come will be a miraculous peace. Not something the League of Nations figured out after World War I, not after the United Nations putzes around with all kinds of stuff, not after Trump is messing with Ukraine and Russia. That does not lead to miraculous peace. It may be temporary respite. It's got to be miraculous. It can't be us, in spite of our efforts. So no wonder people are desperate for things like that. So Isaiah tells us and promises us of a future that we can hope for. A new beginning of peace. Now, he doesn't say this. I'll get back to it in a second. But it's a peace that passes understanding. Isaiah is kind of sort of talking about. But he's also talking about an end to war and hope. Hope in God, because God. Who else can we hope in? And I can hope in Fran. You know, I might hope Fran shows up next Sunday, but that's not the kind of hope we have in God. That's just kind of a desire and a wish for something to happen. God is hope. And that's Isaiah's message. Then and now, throughout all time, in spite of the evidence you may come up with out of history. Now, 800 years or about after Jesus, after Isaiah shows up, Jesus comes along. And rather than giving us rhetoric about hope, at least in Matthew, Jesus gives us a warning. He tells us of the need to remain awake under threat. He ends up his story, his instruction, his warning, with the concept of a man breaking into your house and you being wary of that violence. He's doing the same thing, but he's saying be alert. We need to remain awake. Don't go to sleep. It doesn't mean not getting your 8 hours every night. He's talking about becoming unaware of what's going on in the world around you and the people around you, what's happening. Be aware, be alert, be watchful, be wary. Because Isaiah wasn't right yet. Hasn't been right yet. But he will be. Someday. Because the hope that Isaiah talked about is embodied in Jesus, who he calls, who Matthew calls the Son of Man, the Son of God. Jesus is the hope. He is the end of the old world, the old age. Interesting, the word for age in Greek is aeon. We have the word eon, which means a long time, right? Jesus is the new aeon, and he's the beginning of that new age. Jesus' work on earth began with his incarnation, which took place about 8 months and 2,000 years ago, something like that. And that beginning of his work ended on Christmas, or began again, or started in the middle somewhere on Christmas morning. That's what we're waiting for, Jesus appearing. And in a sense, Jesus' work on earth ended at the cross, at Easter. Again, I mentioned last week that without Christmas, there could be no Easter. And without Easter, Christmas is nothing but a holiday. But on the cross, Jesus said, John tells us this in 1930, he says, "It is finished." One of the seven last words of Christ. Hang it, it is finished. And he died. The hope didn't die. For a while, his disciples lost hope and despair, but the hope did not die. Because he rose, and it was a new beginning. Again, jump back. Isaiah says it's an end to war and violence and evil and a beginning of a new age of peace. And Jesus comes and starts a new beginning that apparently ends on the cross, but then he rose and it's a new beginning. And that's where we are right now. We are living in the new beginning of Jesus. It is both and. It has happened, and it still happened. You ever heard that expression, both and? I don't hear it very often. I first ran into it in seminary. I've experienced a lot since then, and what it means is that two things happen simultaneously. Is it hot or is it cold in here? Yes. It's both and. I may be freezing, Bob may be nice and comfortable because he just wore some shirt on. Well, he might be cold and I might be comfortable. It's both and. It's both hot and cold at the same time. It's perception. But in Jesus, the both and in this case means he is the end of one thing and the beginning of another. Both and. War and damages and violence is still with us. However, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, is with us. The hope is with us. We live in a both and world. We fight constant battles. There's a song out a couple years now. One of the refrains is that we're fighting battles in a war you already won. Talking about God. And the war is over, but the battles still go on. Remember your history, the War of 1812, and the Battle of New Orleans, which was fought in 1813, when the war was already, or 1814, when the war was already over. They didn't know that, so they kept fighting. That's how we are. We are fighting every day. God already won the war. Just read the last page. And look around and you'll see the reality that the war is still going on, no matter how well it's sugarcoated by people out yonder. I won't ever sugarcoat anything. People tell me I'm too blunt sometimes because I have no tact. I have plenty of tact, I just don't use it. People need the truth. Many years ago, I was in a hallway at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, and there was a Japanese doctor there who was there in the oncology unit, and he actually talked like this. He was talking to a patient, and he said, "Oh, so sorry, you have cancer and going to die. But first, we give you chemotherapy and make you very, very sick." He got fired. That's how they do it in Japan. They tell them the truth that, "Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. It appears that you might have cancer, and we need to do this, that, and we're going to give you this chemotherapy. Give you, no, you're going to die, man. You want to die and get sick first? I'd much rather have somebody tell me, 'I'm going to die, I'm going to make you sick first, give me a choice,' than sugarcoat it." Jesus doesn't sugarcoat stuff. But the peace that passes understanding is here, and we have that hope in God. We have the peace. We have God's joy inside. You might not be happy all the time, but you can be filled with joy. I knew lots of people that were in jail or prison, but they had joy inside. You have God's love. Most importantly, we have God's Christ in Jesus. And that's what we celebrate during Advent. The promises that God made us from before forever even began. Advent shows us what it means to live as God's people in the both and, between the promise and the fulfillment, between Christ's first coming and his return, between what God's already done and what he's still to complete. And in the meantime, we celebrate! We celebrate that hope, peace, joy, and love and Christ. We celebrate his birth, anticipate his death, and again, celebrate his resurrection and return. So, many times, especially this time of year, we ask, when is Jesus coming again? I read a real small article this morning. Never seen it before. It just popped up on Facebook, I think it was. I was taught many years ago that the reason we celebrate Christmas on December 25th was that the Emperor Constantine, in the 4th century AD, when he made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire, declared December 25th to be the day we celebrate the birth of Christ. Because the main antagonist to Christianity in that day and time was a god named Mithras. I'll tell you about him sometime. But Mithras had a birthday. Guess what day it was? December 25th. So Constantine made that Jesus' birthday to supplant and replace Mithras. But today I read something where we know when, it was really bizarre, he said that somebody calculated back to saying that Jesus was conceived in March 25th. And so, of course, 9 months later is what? December 25th. I kind of don't buy that. But his coming, when? Don't know. Tomorrow? Don't know. Unexpectedly. Weeks, months, years from now. Aeons. But Jesus tells us that he will return, so surely he will. He never says when. But there are hints in some of the monologues he has as he's teaching. There's no dates. He talks about wars and rumors of wars and things like that. We hear that all the time. How often do you read about an earthquake happening? That's one of the things Jesus mentions. How often do you, hey, we had a blood moon tonight. The moon will turn to blood, Jesus says. Not literally, but you know, all these things happen. So you can't pick it out. Let me tell you a story about con artists. Ever heard of a guy named William Miller? William Miller was a famous guy back in the 19th century. He was a farmer, very prosperous farmer. He was a Baptist preacher, and he was a so-called self-taught student of the Bible, and he lived in northeastern New York. And he sat down, and he determined that Jesus would return to earth sometime between March 21st, 1843, and March 21st, 1844. Give him credit, he wasn't exact. Give a year's time. Well, his followers and such were waiting, and March 21st, 1844 passed without an incident. He made this prediction in 1841, I think it was. Yet the majority of his followers, who were called Millerites, because his name is William Miller, he maintained their faith in him anyway. So he went back in further discussion with other people and more study, he came up with a new date. Jesus was coming back April 18th, 1844. Which came and went without Jesus dropping by to say hi. He's still following. Then Samuel Snow, one of his devoted followers, recalculated it all. And he presented that Christ would return on October 22nd, 1844. Guess what? October 22nd came and went like any other day. By this time, the Millerites called this the Great Disappointment. So they reorganized themselves and they became the Seventh-day Adventists that are still around today. They grew out of this guy conning people. People went and sold all their belongings and gave it away because they thought the world was going to end. Now, he wasn't like James Jones and Jones said that got people getting to it. They gave it away. But still, you can't do that. That's why Jesus gives us a sobering call to vigilance. You got to stay awake. You got to keep awake. Because the coming of man, coming of the Son of Man, coming of God, coming of the Son of God, will be sudden and unanticipated, as Jesus said, like a thief in the night. So as we prepare for his birthday this Advent, and actually every day of our lives, we have to stay. Stay awake. Stay faithful. Stay reconciled, stay ready, and stay hopeful. There is always hope in God. Amen.